Welcome to the final season of Chill with a Chapter Book. My name is Allison from the Wells Public Library, and this season we are reading Harriet the Spy by Louise Fitzhugh. Chapter 5. That night at dinner, everything was going along as usual. That is, Mr. and Mrs. Welsh were having an interminable, rambling conversation about nothing in particular, while Harriet watched it all like a tennis match. When suddenly, Harriet leaped to her feet as though she had just then remembered, and screamed, "I'll be damned if I'll go to dancing school!" "Harriet!" Mrs. Welsh was appalled. "How dare you use words like that at the table?"
"Or any other place, dear," interjected Mr. Welsh calmly.
"All right, I'll be thinked if I'll go to dancing school!" Harriet stood and screamed this solidly. She was throwing a fit. She only threw fits as a last resort, so that even as she did it, she had a tiny feeling in the back of her brain that she had already lost. She wouldn't, however, have it said that she went down without a try. "Where in the world did you learn a word like that?" Mrs. Welsh's eyebrows were raised almost to her hairline.
"It's not a verb anyway," said Mr. Welsh.
They both sat looking at Harriet as though she were a curiosity put on television to entertain them.
I will not, shouted Harriet at the top of her lungs.
She wasn't getting the right reaction. Something was wrong.
"Oh, but you will," said Mrs. Welsh calmly.
"It really isn't so bad. You don't even know what it's like."
"I hated it," said Mr. Welsh, and went back to his dinner.
"I do so know what it's like."
Harriet was getting tired of standing up and screaming. She wished she could sit down, but it wouldn't have done. It would have looked like giving up.
"I went there once on a visit with Beth Ellen because she had to go and I was spending the night, and you have to wear party dresses and all the boys are too short and you feel like a hippopotamus."
She said this all in one breath and screamed hippopotamus. This was too much. The point wasn't coming across at all. They had to be roused out of their complacency. Harriet took a deep breath and in as loud a voice as she could repeated, "I'll be damned if I'll go."
"All right, that does it."
Mrs. Welsh stood up. She was furious.
"You're getting your mouth washed out with soap, young lady. Miss Golly, step in here a minute."
When there was no response, Mrs. Welsh rang the little silver dinner bell, and in a moment, cook appeared. Harriet looked petrified. Soap!
"Cook, will you tell Miss Golly to step in here a minute?"
Mrs. Welsh stood looking at Harriet as though she were a worm, as cook departed. "Now, Harriet, to your room. Miss Golly will be up shortly."
"But your room,"
said Mrs. Welsh firmly, pointing to the door.
Rather feeling like an idiot, Harriet left the dining room. She thought for half a second about waiting around and listening outside, but decided it was too risky. She went up to her room and waited. Old Golly came in a few minutes later.
"Well now, what is this about dancing school?" she asked amiably.
"I'm not going," Harriet said meekly. There was something that made her feel ridiculous when she shouted at Old Golly. Maybe because she never got the feeling with Old Golly that she did with her parents, that they never heard anything.
"Why not?" Old Golly asked sensibly. Harriet thought a minute. The other reasons weren't really it. It was that the thought of being in dancing school somehow made her feel undignified. Finally, she had it.
"Spies don't go to dancing school," she said triumphantly.
"Oh, but they do," said Old Golly.
"They do not," said Harriet rudely.
"Harriet," Old Golly took a deep breath and sat down. "Have you ever thought about how spies are trained?"
"Yes, they learn languages and guerrilla fighting and everything about a country, so if they're captured, they'll know all the old football scores and things like that."
"That's boy spies, Harriet. You're not thinking."
Harriet hated more than anything else to be told by Old Golly that she wasn't thinking. It was worse than any soap.
"What do you mean?" she asked quietly.
"What about girl spies? What are they taught?"
"The same things."
"The same things and a few more. Remember that movie we saw about Mata Hari one night on television?"
"Yes."
"Well, think about that. Where did she operate? Not in the woods guerrilla fighting, right? She went to parties, right? And remember that scene with the general or whatever he was? She was dancing, right? Now, how are you going to be a spy if you don't know how to dance?"
There must be some answer to this, thought Harriet, as she sat there silently. She couldn't think of a thing. She went, "Humph," rather loudly. Then she thought of something.
"Well, do I have to wear those silly dresses? Couldn't I wear my spy clothes? They're better to learn to dance in anyway. In school, we wear our gym suits to learn to dance."
"Of course not. Can you see Mata Hari in a gym suit? First of all, if you wear your spy clothes, everyone knows you're a spy, so what have you gained? No, you have to look like everyone else. Then you'll get by and no one will suspect you."
"That's true," said Harriet miserably. She couldn't see Mata Hari in a gym suit either.
"Now," Old Golly stood up, "you better march downstairs and tell them you changed your mind."
"What'll I say?"
Harriet felt embarrassed.
"Just say you've changed your mind."
Harriet stood up resolutely and marched down the steps to the dining room. Her parents were having coffee. She stood in the doorway and said in a loud voice, "I've changed my mind." They looked at her in a startled way. She turned and left the doorway abruptly. There was nothing further to be said. As she went back up the steps, she heard them burst out laughing, and then her father say, "Boy, that Miss Golly is magic, sheer magic. I wonder where we'd be without her." Harriet didn't know how to approach Janie about her defection, but she decided she must. At lunch, Sport and Janie sat laughing over the new edition of the Gregory News, which had just come out. The Gregory News was the school paper. There was a page reserved for every grade in the middle school and every grade in the upper school. The lower school were such idiots they didn't need a page.
"Look at that, it's ridiculous."
Janie was talking about Marianne Hathaway's editorial about candy wrappers everywhere.
"She just did that because Miss Whitehead talked about them on opening day," Harriet sneered.
"Well, what else? She hasn't got the sense to think of anything original."
Sport bit into a hard-boiled egg. Sport made his own lunch, and it was usually hard-boiled eggs.
"But it's so dumb and boring," Harriet said. "Listen to this. We must not drop our candy wrappers on the ground. They must be put into the waste baskets provided for this purpose."
"It's not even news. We hear it practically every day."
"I'll put her in a waste basket," said Janie with satisfaction. "My father says you have to catch the reader's attention right at first and then hold it," said Sport.
"Well, she just lost it," said Harriet.
"You ought to write it, Harriet. You're a writer," said Sport.
"You wouldn't do it now?"
"Oh, no.
I wouldn't do it now if they paid me. They can have their dumb paper."
Harriet finished her sandwich with a frown.
"They should be blown up," said Janie. They ate in silence for a moment.
"Janie?" Harriet hesitated so long that they both looked up at her.
"I think they've got me," she said sadly.
"What? Was that sandwich poisoned?"
Janie stood up. The egg fell right out of Sport's mouth.
"No,"
Harriet said quickly. Now it was anticlimactic. "I mean dancing school," Harriet said grimly. Janie sat down and looked away as though Harriet had been impolite.
"Dancing school?" Sport squeaked, picking the egg out of his lap.
"Yes," said Jane grimly.
"Oh boy, am I glad. My father never even heard of that."
Sport grinned around his egg.
Well, said Harriet sadly.
I wouldn't count on that, thought Harriet.
Are my family going out too? She asked.
Yes, they are. You're stuck with me, said the cook in a grumpy way. Harriet hated that. The cook never wanted to do anything in the evening except read the journal, then fall asleep.
Harriet hated the quietness of the house, the wholesale emptiness that seemed to envelop her as soon as the last door had shut, the last voice had called out gaily, "Go to sleep on time, be a good girl." She didn't mind at all when they went out, if old Golly were there, because they always spent the evening playing checkers and watching television.
"How's the weather out?" asked old Golly unexpectedly.
"Right pretty," said the cook.
Thought Harriet. "Maybe she's going to meet him someplace outside."
Harriet got up from the table.
"Well," said old Golly, "guess I won't see you till tomorrow."
"Why?" asked Harriet.
"Well, you're going out now, aren't you?"
"No."
"No?" asked old Golly, considerable surprise showing in her voice.
"No," said Harriet, a tiny sense of triumph creeping into her voice. "I'm just going up to my room."
"Oh, well, I'll see you before I go then. I'm leaving about 5, said old Golly, and poured herself another cup of tea.
Harriet left the room. 5 o'clock. Perhaps she should station herself somewhere at 5 to get a good view of the front door. It was all very interesting. When she got to her room, she wrote in her notebook, "Where do people go at 5 o'clock? She has already had tea, so she won't go out to tea. A movie? Old Golly doesn't like them very much. Says they poison your mind. The circus is in town. If I were meeting somebody, I would make them take me to the circus. I love the freaks. If I go across the street and hide behind a tree in the park, I can see the front door just right." At 4:45, she sneaked past Old Golly's room. She could hear Old Golly getting dressed and whistling to herself as she did. She must be in a good mood to whistle, thought Harriet. She found an appropriate tree and waited. She waited and waited, looking at her watch every 2 minutes. A policeman strolled by and stared at her. She tried to look casual, as though she just happened to lean against that tree all the time, so what was he looking at? Lots of taxis passed. She watched a woman park her car, a delivery man on one side of those bikes with a cart in front parked in front of her house. She looked to see if it were Little Joe Curry, but it was a much older man with a little black mustache. He went up to her front door. Suddenly, it hit her. Could this be the boyfriend? She watched as he rang their bell. He must be. Mrs. Welsh always ordered from the DeSantis, and this man's jacket had another store printed on it. The door opened and old Golly came out. It was. This was the boyfriend. Harriet gave him the real once-over as he and old Golly stood on the steps smiling and chatting to each other. He was rather fat, but in a round, hard, not unpleasant way. His head was completely round. His teeth were very white under the trim mustache. His skin was darkish, and the features of his face formed a pleasant, round, cheerful image. He wore, naturally, a delivery boy's coat, but underneath, he wore nice-looking gray flannel pants, and his brown shoes were shined within an inch of their lives. He took old Golly's arm, and they walked down the steps together, still smiling and talking, and never taking their eyes off each other. When they got down to the bottom of the steps, the boyfriend seemed to apologize for something, smiling awkwardly. Then, quick as a flash, he took off his delivery jacket, reached into his cart, pulled out a gray flannel jacket, and put that on. He wore a bright blue tie, and altogether, Harriet thought he looked quite nice. He and old Golly smiled at each other, then started walking toward the park, leaving the delivery cart where it was in front of the house. Harriet squatted down to hide herself more, and through a bush, watched their progress into the park. They were evidently going for a walk beside the river. They chose a path near Harriet, so she waited until they were a little ahead of her, then ran along beside them. She discovered that if they stayed on this path, she could run along, completely hidden by the thick foliage, and, miraculously, hear every word they said. "Mr. Waldenstein, have you ever noticed?" Olgalli sounded terribly proper and enunciated everything quite clearly. "Have you ever noticed how tidy the grass is in this park?"
"Yes, Miss Golly, this park is kept quite well. A lot better than that terrible Washington Square, with all those creatures lying all over the grass. Make a pretty mess, they do."
Mr. Waldenstein had a pleasant speaking voice, although there was a certain amount of rasp and gravel running along the bottom of it. "Yes, I always find it such a pleasure to walk along the river this way. I particularly like to watch the tugboats." Olgalli didn't sound one bit like herself. Her voice seemed much higher, as though she were floating a bit off the ground. "A walk in the park is always a pleasure for me when I am accompanied by an attractive young woman like yourself, Miss Golly." Mr. Waldenstein leaned a little toward Olgalli as he said this. Harriet watched in horror as Olgalli blushed a deep red that started from deep inside her scarf and rushed like a spreading river to her hairline. "Well," thought Harriet, "how about that?" "Oh, Mr. Waldenstein," Olgalli managed to breathe, then tried to change the subject by saying, "Will you look over there at that boat? That is a large one for the East River."
"No offense meant, Miss Golly," Mr. Waldenstein looked worried. "I only want you to know how much I enjoy these Thursdays we have been spending together."
The crimson zoomed up Olgali's face again, making her look exactly like a hawk-nosed Indian. "Big Chief Golly," Harriet thought, "what is happening to you?" And something was definitely happening. Olgalli was not Olgalli today. Instead of being strong, tough, and totally in control, she looked as though she might faint. Harriet pondered on this as she watched them turn onto the esplanade which runs along the river. There was no way to follow them now without being observed, so she decided to run back in the grass and see where they came out. She could keep them in view even if she couldn't hear them. Before going, she scribbled in her notebook, "Life is a great mystery. Is everybody a different person when they are with somebody else? Olgalli has never been this way. I wonder if people act like this when they get married. How could she get married? Would Mr. Waldenstein come to live with us then? They could put their child in my room if they wanted to. I wouldn't mind. I don't think. Unless it was a very noisy child who tried to read my notebooks. Then I would smash it." Mr. Waldenstein and Olgalli were so far away they were beginning to look small, so Harriet closed her notebook and ran up and down the hills and across the paths until she had them quite close again. They were turning off the walk by the river onto one of the smaller paths, the one beside the mayor's house. Harriet crept along beside them. Now she could hear them again. "Would it be your pleasure to attend a movie this evening, Miss Golly?"
"Yes, indeed, I think that would be a fine idea," said Olgalli.
Harriet's mouth dropped open. Olgalli never went to the movies. And here she was, smiling and looking like it was a treat. "Well," Harriet grabbed for her notebook, "if she feels that way, she can jolly well take me to the movies sometime." "Is there something interesting playing?" Olgalli's voice was getting higher and higher, funnier and funnier. "I think that there is a very nice picture playing over on 86th Street, one that you will like. But if you do not like that one when we get there, then there are three other movie houses there, and you can take your pick. I had thought that we could have a nice dinner at the Bauhaus there beforehand, if you would like that. If not, there are lots of other restaurants." Mr. Waldenstein said everything in a very gentle way, looking constantly at Olgalli to see if she liked what he was saying.
"Oh, I think that would be lovely. It sounds like a very pleasant evening."
"Well, that tears it. I happen to know that Olgalli just can't stand German food. She said to me once that if she saw one more wurst on her plate, she would throw it across the room. That was when we had that German cook, before we got this one.
When old Golly gets home tonight, I bet she will laugh with me and say what a terrible evening she had with this silly fat man. They had reached East End Avenue again, so Harriet couldn't hear them anymore. She stood behind the tree and watched them walk toward the house. Then a really funny thing happened. Mr. Waldenstein got on his bicycle. Harriet thought for a minute that he was going off for a while to deliver things, but then her hair stood on end as she watched old Golly, with great agility and even more aplomb, hop onto the delivery cart. She sat very straight and very dignified, while Mr. Waldenstein, pulling a bit, got the bike going down the hill. Harriet watched open-mouthed as they disappeared around the corner into 86th Street. She was so astonished that she sat right down on the ground and wrote, "Well, I never. I've seen everything. I bet old Golly is embarrassed to death. She is really going to laugh when she gets home tonight." Harriet went back to the house. She did a little bit of homework, read a while, then started to play town by herself. She sat with her father and mother for a while when they got in, then went upstairs and sat with her mother while she got dressed to go out to dinner. Everything bored Harriet. She felt tired and dull in the head as she sat watching her mother. She decided to ask her mother questions to entertain herself. "How did you meet Daddy?" "On the boat going to Europe," answered Mrs. Welsh, struggling with her hair. "I know that." "Well, why did you ask then?" "I mean, how did you meet him? How was it?" "What do you mean? You mean how exactly?" "I was coming out of the dining room and I bumped into him. It was a very stormy crossing and he threw up."
"You mean he threw up all over you?"
"Not exactly all over me. Just splashed my feet a bit." Mrs. Welsh laughed. "It wasn't terribly pleasant. He turned beet red, apologized profusely, then passed out. He looked perfectly horrified the next time he saw me." "Do people always turn red when they meet who they're going to marry?" "Well, no, dear, I doubt it. You see, he'd thrown up, that's why." "I know, but I mean, well, what?" "I don't know," said Harriet glumly. She couldn't figure out what to ask. "I mean, what does it feel like?" "To have someone throw up on your feet? Not nice, I can tell you." Mrs. Welsh didn't seem to be listening very hard. "No," said Harriet in an exasperated way. "I mean, what does it feel like when you meet the person you're going to marry?" "Well, dear, you don't know it then. I mean, well, when do you know it?" Mrs. Welsh turned around slowly and looked at Harriet. Her eyes were warm, and she had a curious little smile on her face. "Are you considering it?"
"What?"
"Marriage."
"Me?"
Harriet jumped up. Really, she thought, adults are getting sillier every year.
"I'm only 11.
"I just wondered," said Mrs. Welsh in a bemused voice. "You seem so worried."
"I'm not worried."
Harriet squirmed around. "What am I?" she wondered. "Just curious."
"I just wondered what it felt like," she said, sulking slightly.
"Well," Mrs. Welsh stopped putting on makeup and looked at her reflection with distant eyes. "I imagine it's different for everyone. I felt your father was the best-looking man I'd ever seen. The fact that he threw up made me want to laugh inside instead of being absolutely furious, which is what I would have felt with anyone else. And the next night, when he wasn't in the dining room, I wondered if he was feeling dreadful, and I toyed with the idea of finding out." She went back to her makeup in a businesslike way. "I haven't the faintest idea what anyone else feels." "My mother," thought Harriet, "doesn't think about other people much. If Sport threw up on me, I'd bash his teeth in," Harriet said cheerfully. Oh, no, you wouldn't.
Oh, yes, I would.
Oh, no, you wouldn't, said Mrs. Welsh playfully, and turned around and tickled Harriet's stomach. Harriet giggled and fell off the chair. Mrs. Welsh got up and went to the closet. As she was putting her dress over her head, she said through the cloth, "We've got a long way to go before you start thinking about things like marriage." Her head appeared. "Thank God," she said as she pulled the dress down. "I may not even get married," said Harriet dreamily from the floor, where she lay stretched out, arms and legs wide. "I may go to Europe and meet a lot of generals."
"What?" asked Mrs. Welsh absent-mindedly.
"Oh, nothing," said Harriet.
Mr. Welsh appeared in the doorway.
"Good Lord, you're not half ready," he said in a very irritated way, twitching his cuffs.
Harriet looked at her father in his tuxedo. Was he handsome? She thought to herself that she had never seen him throw up, so she didn't know what he would look like doing that. But maybe everybody looked the same doing that. She had seen Janie throw up once when they went to see a movie about a gorilla, and Janie ate 4 candy bars and 3 bags of popcorn. It was awful.
"Why don't you go and get the car out, darling? I'll be right there."
Mrs. Welsh was flying around the room looking for things. Mr. Welsh was in a terrible grump. "All right," he said peevishly. Then in a rather stiff, formal way, he said, "Good night, Harriet. Go to bed on time. Be a good girl. Don't make any trouble for Miss Golly."
"She's not here." Harriet sat up.
"No, dear, the cook. It's Thursday. Now, go get the car."
"Oh, all right," said Mr. Welsh and stormed out the door.
"Well," said Harriet. She could already feel the empty house descending around her ears. She dragged her feet around, making patterns in the rug, until Mrs. Welsh was ready and going past her through the door, leaving a trail of perfume behind her. She followed her mother downstairs and at the front door suffered herself to be kissed.
"Now be a good girl."
"I know, and don't make any trouble and go to bed and don't read under the covers," Harriet said nastily. Mrs. Welsh laughed, kissed Harriet again, and pinched her cheek.
"That's right, dear, and have a nice evening."
And she sailed out the door.
"That's a new one," thought Harriet.
She got her book and clumped down the steps to the kitchen. The cook sat reading the journal.
"Oh boy," said Harriet, and sat down at the table.
"Ready for your dinner?" murmured the cook.
"Yes!"
Harriet shouted as loud as she could. The silence upstairs was deafening. Harriet tried to stay awake until old Golly came in, but she couldn't. So the next afternoon, after school, she went to old Golly's room even before she went to the kitchen. Harriet had to be dreadfully curious to break routine in this way. She cornered old Golly in as casual a way as possible, standing in the doorway to block old Golly's descent to her tea.
"Well, what's this? Have you had your cake so soon?"
Old Golly smiled at her.
"No, not yet. Did you have a good time?"
Harriet tried to sound indifferent.
"What? Oh, yesterday, you mean? Yes, a lovely time."
Old Golly smiled quite broadly.
"You did?"
Harriet was astonished.
"Well, of course, why not? I went to a fascinating movie and had a very good dinner beforehand."
Old Golly started down the steps.
"What did you eat?"
asked Harriet, leaning over the banister.
"A new kind of wurst I'd never had before, quite good, and good potatoes. Yes, it was a lovely evening."
And old Golly disappeared around the bend. Harriet stood there a minute, thinking. Then she went slowly to her room. She felt the urgent need to make a few notes before she went downstairs. "There is more to this thing of love than meets the eye. I'm going to have to think about this a great deal, but I don't think it will get me anywhere. I think maybe they're all right when they say there are some things I won't know anything about until I'm older. But if it makes you like to eat all kinds of wurst, I'm not sure I'm going to like this." She slammed her notebook and went downstairs. That night,
While she and old Golly were watching a movie on television and playing checkers at the same time, Harriet, thinking of Harrison Withers, said to old Golly, "If people are alone all the time, I feel sorry for them."
"That inward eye which is the bliss of solitude," said old Golly calmly.
"Wordsworth, I wandered lonely as a cloud."
"Well, don't you?"
"What?"
"Feel sorry for them."
"How sweet, how passing sweet is solitude."
"What?"
"William Cowper, retirement."
"Old Golly," Harriet said loudly, "are you trying to say something?"
"Yes."
"Well, what then?"
"Solitude, the safeguard of mediocrity, is to genius the stern friend."
"What?"
Harriet screamed with exasperation. "Emerson, Conduct of Life."
"Old Golly!"
Harriet stood up. She was really furious.
"Do you or don't you feel sorry for people who are alone?"
"No," said old Golly, looking up quizzically at Harriet. "No, I don't."
"Oh," said Harriet, and sat down. "I do."
"This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow, as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man."
Sometimes, Harriet thought, I wish she would just shut up.